So last year, we spoke with Jerry Guagua, who's one of the founders of Redbird Flight Simulations, about advancing the use of cost-effective, high-fidelity motion simulators to improve safety, lower cost, and improve effectiveness of flight training. Well, Jerry is back with us this year to give a progress report on Skyport, an FBO and pilot training center near Austin, Texas, that serves as a living lab for some of the innovations coming from his company. And as China becomes a more important part of our general aviation landscape, there's a demand for pilots that will require training and lots of it. And how that demand will be met is topic number two on the agenda. But let's start with Redbird and with Skyport. And Jerry, thanks for coming back again this year.
Thanks.
So first off, let's just identify where Redbird Flight Simulations is on the ground so that people know where and have a context to come by and visit.
Well, it's right across the street from Piper. That's the easiest way I can explain it, which is out in front of BNC, mm-hmm. Hangars BNC. So.
And you've got a few simulators there, really quite a wide variety of
We're all over the place, actually. We've got one at EAA and one at AOPA and Jeppesen and Ballistic Recovery Systems, and we've got a bunch in our own tents.
And I think I saw one in the Learn to Fly Center as well in the EAA tent. But then at your tent, there's one that is completely unique the world over, and yeah. I want to talk about that for a little bit.
One of a kind. There's nothing like it in the world.
EAA is celebrating the 75th anniversary of the Piper Cub. Not everybody, in fact, some people can't at all, get into a Piper Cub. but you have a solution for that.
We do. You know, every once in a while, we'd like to do something just for us. So our engineers and our shop guys got together, and we developed a full motion, as realistic as you could possibly get, Piper Cub simulator.
Yep.
It's even yellow. And it
and it's got the black lightning bolt on both sides.
Yeah. It's got wheels.
Yeah.
It's got everything. And it was a great exercise for us because we were really excited about this being the 75th anniversary for the Cubs. And it just seemed like a really nice, fun thing to do. And we've had an unending line of, especially all the Cub pilots have come in and tried it, and they're really liking it. And we made this thing so realistic that to start the engine, you have to climb out of the simulator and go and spin the prop on the front of it in order to get the engine to start. So, you know, we got to give them the real feel of
that's great. And, of course, the guy inside's got to have the switches in the right place.
Oh, yeah, the magneto's got to be on, and, you know, everything's got to, you know, it's the real thing. So,
so what happens when you land a little too hard? Does it do what a cub does?
it'll bounce on you. And I'm such a bad tailwheel pilot that I can ground loop it pretty often too. So so it'll ground loop on you. It really does. It really does perform. They tell me, like the longtime cub pilot is like a cub. I hope everybody will come by and try it because it's, you know, if you never get a chance to fly a cub, at least you'll get a chance with this.
Yeah, that's great. Now, when you were with us last year, it was a point in time when you were breaking ground on a facility outside of Austin, Texas, called Skyport. Tell me what Skyport was intended to do, and what's happened in the year since.
Well, Skyport is a laboratory that we built for. We built to study simulator-centric flight training for primary training, which nobody has done before in a big way, and to provide a laboratory to study our equipment, because we've got five or six projects in R&D all the time. Two or three pop out as products, and we have to have a place to really shake them out before we send them into the marketplace. And so we opened the Skyport, which is a combination Part 141 FITS flight school, which is very unusual. We know we're the only one in our region, and we may be the only one in the country, where pilots don't have to take a check ride and there is no hours requirements. In other words, when our guys say you're a pilot, you're a pilot. And it's based on learning all the maneuvers and pilotage and all of the stick and rudder skills in the simulator and then transitioning to the airplane. We recently did an experiment with 10 students where all of their training was done in the simulator right to the in-house check ride. And then when they passed that check ride, they did transition training to the airplanes because we just wanted to see what the effect on ours was. We told them ahead of time that it was what was going to happen to them, so they were happy with that. And we're getting some terrific results. So we started out early on graduating pilots with an average of 33 and a half hours in the airplane to a pilot's license, which was about 50 hours under the average, according to the AOPA study. We're getting some of that regression to the mean now, and those numbers are going up, but they're going to settle out well under 40 hours. And so consequently...
How many sim hours in that scenario?
Well, it's a lot. I mean, you know, it'll probably take you back to 85, actually. You know, you're getting 40, 50 hours. But for our students, they don't... there's no cost associated with it. Since it's a fixed fee pilot's license, there's no cost for simulator time. And our simulators are Generation 2, which have the ability to deliver training without an instructor aboard and give feedback on how the student is doing. So we encourage our students to climb into simulators when they're not being used and practice. And the results have been very interesting so far. So it's been a great experiment. We're having a great time. I wish I had more than 6 months worth of data to share with you, but that's what we've got, and we're learning a lot. And not all of it is good. I mean, you know, not everything is working out like we thought, but that's why we did the experiment. So
yeah, it's probably driving changes in the technology too. You're probably taking information from that and feeding that into the product development process.
Oh, absolutely.
Give me an example of something that you learned that's changing the technology.
Well, one of the things that we introduced last year also was a product called Parrot, which is artificial air traffic control, which is we developed a context recognition engine for voice recognition that allows you to dial in a frequency if the simulation is a particular place over an airport or something, and call the tower, call clearance, and have the computer understand everything you say and react the way those would. As we get more and more international students, we find that while they're speaking English in other countries in aviation, the phraseology is different and a lot of the standards are different. So we're learning a lot there. We've had a few failed experiments. We're experimenting early on now with in the fall with biometrics, because we want to understand what kind of how simulator training affects confidence once in the airplane. Because we think one of the reasons we're getting such good results is because by the time the pilot does steep turns in the airplane, they're already very confident and their stress levels are down. And confidence in flight training is everything. It just is, you know. So
the biometrics would be used to sort of evaluate what's happening after the fact?
Right. I mean, they reach a certain stress level when doing steep turns in the simulator. And by the way, we can put pilots under a lot of stress in these simulators. You know, then when we get them in the airplane, what happens to their stress level, their heart rates and, you know, sweating and those kinds of things? It's basically a lie detector, you know. It has those kinds of capabilities,
right.
Just
okay.
To see what happens. We have no idea what we're going to find. But we're trying to understand why people seem to be coming up the curve faster and you know, what is it about it. But we think there's a confidence thing going on there, you know.
So you talked about what it's like inside the pilot's head to go through a program like this. What about what's inside his wallet?
Well, our program is a set fee. It's $9,500 to a pilot's license, no matter how long it takes. And I have to say that we've discovered that not only is it more cost effective for the average pilot, which is now spending $13,000 on an average pilot license, it's actually a more profitable model too. We're more profitable than per student than the average flight school, and a lot of it's about asset utilization, you know.
So what'll happen? What do you expect to happen over time as FBOs start to recognize that there's advantage both to the pilot and to the FBO? I mean, it's not just as easy as running out and adding a simulator to the set of tools that the school has, because you're talking about a curriculum and a methodology change that really is important to leverage all of this, right?
It's a method. I mean, method is probably the best way I could describe the overarching of what's going on, and that is it's equipment with certain capabilities, it's curriculums, and it's delivery methods, too. When you think about methods like the Pirelli method or the Suzuki method for training kids how to, you know, play a violin or something like that. I mean, that's probably best describes this entire package. And it's going to take a while to get, you know, to move this particular paradigm.